Creative Male Aging, a radio and internet project in which we explore and challenge many of the conventions around aging and look particularly at new options for today's older men. I'm Tony Ryan. Welcome to the program.
In our working lives, we have a life in work. So if you think of three spaces, if you think of work, home, and community identity, I have an identity as a husband and as a father. And that's really important. I have an identity at the moment as a paid worker. But when my paid work finishes in the next couple of years, I'm hoping that home will be good. But some people's home isn't good. So if you've not got any of those things, what are you and who are you? There are some men, quite a large proportion of men who are actually in men's sheds, whose main identity is as a shedder. And that is a huge lifeline in terms of combating depression.
Many of us men do identify ourselves in terms of our work. But as we've just heard, when that ends, many of us will face some serious questions as to who we really are. Today in the first of two programs, we focus on how we older men can begin to redefine ourselves in retirement, when we can no longer say, I'm an accountant or a plumber, a teacher or, in my case, a radio producer. In this first program, we hear from two contributors, both of whom have had long experience in working with men. Professor Barry Golding continues to have a close interest in the development in Australia and overseas of the Men's Shed movement. And Sue Ross is Community Development Officer at Eastwood Community Centre. Sue, we're here in the Eastwood Community Centre in suburban Adelaide. What do you see here when men, for instance, in that situation of losing a job or losing a partner, how do they become involved in a place like this?
We have a diverse range of men that come. Some men are forced into retirement because they have lost their job, and they've lost their job in their early 50s or mid-50s, and they've just not been able to get back into the workforce. So they come to us under a scheme with the Commonwealth Government through Centrelink to do 15 hours of volunteer work. And they come very enthusiastically because they are committed to being a volunteer within the community, and they come to do different roles. They work in our administration area, they work in building and maintenance, they work in our community garden. And they basically, some just come and will be a general dog's body for what's going on. Others come very specifically and want to be actively involved, tied to a program. So we have a digital photography program and they become actively involved in that. Other men that come to the centre come because we offer different things. So they come to be a volunteer in the community garden. They love gardening. They want to extend their garden plot, shall we say. They've done enough gardening at home. There's no more garden to garden. And they see an opportunity here to also give back to community. Other men come who are retired to participate with other men and to participate in a program. An example is our chess group that we have, which is all male dominated. They come to learn from each other about chess, but they also come for that socialisation and for that activity of getting out of home and coming to a place and being with like-minded men around a particular thing that they're quite passionate about. But their engagement, whilst they believe, I believe, that they believe it's just about chess, it's also about mixing with other people in the community as well. You know, they're in today, we have our chess group on, they're very astute, oh, you've left your computers on, I haven't seen this person, you know, last week we had one of our chess men in hospital for a couple of weeks. That caring aspect of them coming in, telling the staff that somebody's in hospital, are we aware that this hasn't happened? That enables us within the centre to be able to make sure that if that person is living at home, which this chap was actually living at home by himself, and he's an older man in his 70s, that we actually are just keeping contact with him. We're ensuring that he has some support services, but we also know where he's gone in the community and he's just not been in hospital and gone home and doesn't have that connect. So their relationship with us, whilst it's about chess, it's also about that broader connection to other people within the community as well.
We'll hear more from Sue Ross throughout the program. Based in the School of Education at Federation University in Ballarat, Victoria, Professor Barry Golding is also National President of Adult Learning Australia and patron of the Australian Men's Shed Association.
In an era of unprecedented rapid change, I think it's critically important that every person, including every adult, has access to learning throughout life, because in order to cope with later life and the transitions in life, we need to have a very broad view of the world, and we need to be aware of all of the influences that are impinging on us. And we need to cope with the what I've often called the increasingly rapid and curved balls that life throws up. The idea that we need to learn a lot early is being replaced with a view that we need to learn all the time, not necessarily in a formal sense, though. So it's not about doing courses. It's about becoming more aware of self and of our relationships with others.
I've heard the terms lifelong and life-wide learning.
Yes, Adult Learning Australia has a policy basically of lifelong and life-wide learning. The best way of describing it is to think of a long table where the length of the table is life and the width of the table are all of the things that happen at a particular stage in your life. So you could rule, put a big tape across the table, and that would represent a particular age. Let's say it's my age at 64. At age 64, there's lots of things that I can learn about in terms of my identity, my work, my family, my role as a father or as a partner or perhaps as a grandfather or whatever. So life-wide refers to the stuff that happens at any stage across the table, and life-long is the length of the table. And most people tend to think of the stuff back towards one end of the table, which is at youth, and we only think of the stuff that sort of fits in the boxes like English and maths and science, and whereas we all know that that other stuff is actually as important, if not more important. It's who we are, and it's about our place in the world that we really need to get our head around at any age.
Well, that leads me to the other part of the title of the book, and that is Men Learning Throughout Life. Why men?
Well, I went to an opening of the Glasgow Women's Library recently, which was fantastic, where women were actually celebrating books that were about women and about women's lives. And it was a wonderful occasion, but it got me thinking, how many books are there actually? I know people will say, well, a lot of the world is about men, but how many books are actually where men are actually reflecting on men and men's practices and men's masculinities and men's stuff generally? And the Glasgow Women's Library was a huge library. I reckon you could fit most books about men, which are really reflective of men, in a very small phone box. And it frightens me when I actually put into Google men's learning that my name comes up. And I'm thinking, either I'm banging on about something and there's something wrong with me, or I've hit on something that's actually interesting, different and important. Probably both of those are partly true, but I won't go there.
One of the things that occurs in a non-structured way is how men actually come to the centre and what they actually learn. And a fantastic example of that is our community garden. We have a community garden here, which is, it's actually supported by a group of volunteer men. But what's fantastic about that is that one of our men who actually runs the coordinates the volunteers in our garden is an absolute avid gardener. And he's very passionate about how he works with those volunteers within our community in the context that they don't just come and dig over earth or that they just plant plants. He's always educating them. He's always bringing in information. He's got a whole range of books that are available to those volunteers. He's always talking about plants and fertilisation and what's coming up in the new seasons. And he's also sharing his life experience of being an avid gardener, a person who within his own home plants vegetables on the verge out the front of his house, and every bit of his garden has plants, and they're for beauty in context of flower and colour, but they're also there for vegetables to eat and to share. But his wealth and depth of knowledge is invaluable in that what we often hear is that what they have, those men have learned, is so much informal learning around plants and their adaptability and how to plant them and not plant them, that that then extends over into when they sit down and have their afternoon tea, they're now doing Italian language because our volunteer is actually Italian. And that has just emanated from this collaborative group of men that come together around a passion for gardening. But really now what they're doing is they're actually extending their learning. Other men within the centre come very much because they want to learn. And we have a fantastic digital photography group. And that group is actually made up of a large number of people with acquired brain injury. But there are three men within that group that come to engage to learn more about photography and then how they can actually share that information with some of the students who are in that class who do have an acquired brain injury. So those students need reinforcement and they might need a lot of repetition because they don't remember things. So their learning is, I'm learning something about a new item that I have, which is their new digital camera, how to actually then use products like Adobe Photoshop. But then they're also giving back their learning to those people who are less fortunate in that they do have memory issues.
Let's have a look at the situation of men beyond work, men who have retired or men who can't find work. They are, it could be said, beyond work.
Yes. And I'm glad you put the beyond paid work, because we're very careful when I talk about it to acknowledge that although you may be beyond paid work, as in beyond paid work as in not needing to work or not having a body that allows you to engage in physical work, or maybe having a disability or early dementia or being in a caring role which prevents you going into the workforce, we know from, for example, from the Men's Shed movement, that many men have got a huge amount to bring to a community context like a Men's Shed or a community radio station or to a neighbourhood house or to a sporting club, where they can give heaps and keep learning heaps without necessarily being enrolled in anything. And so it gives people an opportunity to give back, but also importantly gives people an identity in later life. And this is really one thing that we tend not to teach people. People come out of school without knowing who they are. And the tragedy is a lot of people come out of work not knowing who they are, including a lot of men, because while you're in work, you can say, I'm a bus conductor, or I'm a sales assistant, or I'm a plumber. But who are you, and what is your identity when you've finished work? And I guess this is where the stuff that I've done a lot of research on in Men's Sheds come into, because people take on a new identity as a shedder, and that's their identity as a shedder, which has actually becomes quite personally transformational, but also transformational in the context in which they're actually working voluntarily.
Today in Creative Male Ageing, we're looking at older men and our identity when our paid working days are over. As we're hearing, these existential questions relating to identity and purpose in retirement are very real for many men. We're hearing from Sue Ross, Community Development Officer at Eastwood Community Centre in suburban Adelaide, and Barry Golding, Professor of Education at Federation University in Victoria. Barry, earlier in the interview you mentioned men and sheds and finding their identity. Could I take you back to that?
The great thing about a shed is that there's something for everyone to do. And so there's some men, for example, who can't use their hands or have some sort of disability that prevents them doing stuff. There's some men who do stuff in sheds, including sweeping the floor or making coffee or just sitting and talking and sharing a joke. Their role is important in a shed, as are the people who are ex-tradesmen who can keep the machine safe and operating and who can turn wood and make things and assemble things and paint and sand and whatever, right down to people who used to be accountants who can do the books, right down to people whose life was in occupational health and safety who keep the shed safe, who operate websites, who can do the shed website. I would argue that we all need to have an identity beyond home, ideally. In our working lives, we have a life in work. So if you think of three spaces, if you think of work, home, and community identity, I have an identity as a husband and as a father, and that's really important. I have an identity at the moment as a paid worker. But when my paid work finishes in the next couple of years, I'm hoping that home will be good, but some people's home isn't good. And some people go through separation, some people lose access to their kids, so they're no longer a father or a husband or a grandfather because they don't have access to the kids and the kids have moved away or don't have anything to do with the grandfather. So if you've not got any of those things, what are you and who are you? There are some men, quite a large proportion of men who are actually in men's sheds, whose main identity is as a shedder. And that is a huge lifeline in terms of combating depression, in terms of being able to give back to the community and feel like they've actually got something to give back. Yesterday I was in the Windale men's shed in one of the poorest areas of Newcastle. And it was just an absolute hive of activity. There were men doing stuff everywhere. And that happens 4 days a week. No one is paid in that shed and everyone does stuff. It's a huge operation and it runs, the whole thing runs for $16,000 a year. And when you actually take it apart, if you look at what the government is giving, maybe the federal government's giving 20 cents an hour towards these people, and maybe the state government is kicking in 20 cents an hour, and the community and the men are probably putting in $2 an hour in terms of value. So even from an economic rationalist point of view, it's a no-brainer. To give people that identity in later life means two things. One, it means people are sharing the lifetime of experience that they have and are actually becoming mentors and teachers to other men, but they're also becoming learners. And the other important thing is that it's keeping people out of services, use of services. So it means that people are less likely to need psychotherapists or to be on antidepressants or to go and visit the doctor. And I've met many men, including men in the shed at Yorktown that you mentioned before, where I did an interview. And then one guy said to me, I've got two choices. I can go to the shed or I can go on pills. He said, I'd much rather go to the shed. It's more sustainable. And while you can, you do.
A fantastic outcome of our digital photography group is that both able-bodied and people with disabilities working together is that in the past they've actually produced some fantastic works. They produced a calendar on a regular basis, and this last 2 years they've undertaken a range of projects where the whole group goes out 1 week and they go to an educational facility or they go to something where they're going to learn. So an example is the other week they went to the art gallery, they've been down to Adelaide Adelaide Jail. They'd been up at Mount Lofty when the camellias and the roses were out. They then take photos and they come back and they then produce their photos, might put them into Adobe Photoshop to manipulate. That group now has actually extended on to develop up a series of photos which are currently in our hall and have been up for the last couple of months as a photographic display. It's a fantastic array of work, but what it actually demonstrates is that we've come to learn how to use the camera, we're now socialising, we're now engaged in a discussion with our tutors around where we're going to go and what we're actually going to do. For some of the people within that group, they have become quite proficient. So a lot of the photos that are actually up are now up for sale, and quite a number of them have been sold.
Its role, its achievement.
That's right, it is. It is about achievement and that sense of satisfaction, whether you achieve it by yourself or whether you actually achieve it as a group. One of the most exciting things that I did see was that a number of our tutors and students within our digital photography program really wanted to recognise one of our students' abilities. And in 2011, one of our students actually won the Adult Learners Week Award for Outstanding Student for the year. And this was a chap who was a high-level karate expert competing at international level, and through an accident at a tournament he acquired a brain injury. He now is quite proficient in his photography, but his recognition of his learning from where he came from after his injury was recognised through winning an award. But that sense of achievement every week when he comes back is, you can see it, it just does so much for his health and well-being, his socialisation and his contacts and the satisfaction and the happiness that you see within that group. It's non-calculable in terms of words or in terms of dollars. It is just something that you have to see.
Barry, as men, we have an identity, and as men, our identity is tied up with thoughts of masculinity. Could you comment on that in terms of older men's learning?
A lot of men, including men of our age, anyone sort of over 50, 60, was born in an era where we were exposed to a relatively limited range of masculinities, and we were expected to conform to stereotypes which were common in school, and women did this and men did that, and women played this game and men played that game. Now, I'm not saying that men in later life can't transform those identities, but they are pretty firmly part of who we are. Thank goodness younger men can be exposed to more diverse masculinities, including masculinities which depart from what feminists would call negative and hegemonic masculinities. Hegemonic being sort of not only restrictive but actually required stuff, and negative in the sense of being negative to women and also being destructive of other men, and bullying and being macho, and if you're not macho and you can't play football and you can't drink, then you're not a man. And that's the negative stereotype that really was current in a lot of communities and remains part of the sort of the Australian myth in some ways. But it's sort of reinforced by some of the other stereotypes which go back to militarism and Anzac, and the idea that somehow it's men who do the killing and it's men who basically do military service and suck it up and then live with the consequences for the rest of their lives, or they die. And I think we've come to a point where, you know, to take a really good example, in the recent Eurovision Song Contest, we've got a woman slash man who has actually won the contest, who is neither male nor female, but both. And in a sense, that's an era that a lot of men are now in. Now, a lot of older men don't cope with that, and there are still men who don't cope with gay men, and yet one of the great things about men's sheds is that while many of the men who come to men's sheds may come from that negative and hegemonic background, they're actually in sheds where the shed movement says we are welcoming of all types of men, including men who are gay, including men who are Aboriginal, including men who've got a disability, including men who can't use a lathe. But things are changing, and I just think that the masculinities that we are actually exposed to, including, interestingly, the masculinity of being a learner, because learning is something that women have tended to take on. Women have tended to do the homework. Women are outperforming men in most areas of education and training. There's almost twice as many women in universities in most developed countries, including across Europe and New Zealand and Australia, than there are men. That is fantastic. But it raises issues about intergenerational equity and how to boys and grandchildren who are men feel about themselves if the men are still avoiding learning. So I'd argue that learning should and can be a men's thing. And I would argue that men need to claim back learning in their own way. So I guess, in short answer to your question, learning and masculinity is actually really important.
Male ageing is one of those topics which I think will take us into the future. I think that there is so much that we have often focused on women and children and families that males have been neglected. I think that, you know, there's a lot that goes around for young men. But, yeah, older men in the community, older men ageing disgracefully, shall we say. And there is so many fantastic examples now within communities of men sheds and men within the community as volunteers, which is just really the tip of the iceberg for men in retirement.
We've heard today from Professor Barry Golding from Federation University in Ballarat and from Sue Ross, Community Development Officer at Eastwood Community Centre in Adelaide. The project consultant is psychotherapist, author and educator Dr. John Ashfield. Next week, we continue this theme of older men's learning with a visit to the Paraka Men's Shed in Adelaide. Further information on the topic of older men, identity and learning will shortly be online, creativemaleaging.com. That's creativemaleaging.com. This Creative Male Ageing project was made possible with assistance from the Office for the Ageing, Department of Health and Ageing, the Government of South Australia. From PBAFM in Adelaide, I'm Tony Ryan. Till next time, go well.